Since perceptions control life, then it would really be incumbent upon us to identify which of our perceptions that deal with biology and science are more accurate perceptions and which perceptions are flawed and are taking us away from our destination. In this regard, I list what are called three assumptions. I actually call them three assumptions of the apocalypse, meaning that if we do not correct the assumptions, we will face the end of times that we're beginning to face right now. We are holding three truths about science which are actually total untruths. And the significance is until we correct that, we are taking human civilization and destroying it. In fact, science has already revealed that we are deep into the sixth mass extinction to hit this planet. There have been five previous mass extinctions where life has been essentially wiped out and started all over again. In the five previous mass extinctions, science attributes those extinctions to basically extraterrestrial forces such as comets or asteroids hitting the Earth and changing the environment and causing life to suffer under that trauma. However, scientists have agreed on one thing. The sixth mass extinction, the one we're experiencing right now, is directly due to human behavior. That we are misunderstanding our relationship and role to the planet and our relationship to nature and the environment. And as a result of that, we are destroying that which has provided us life, the environment. So it's a very interesting time right now that we must really start to consider other alternatives in order to recover the health of ourselves and our planet. And that's why I talk about these three assumptions as the assumptions of the apocalypse, because our continuing of these same beliefs is actually leading to our own destruction. The three hypotheses are as follows. Number one, biological mechanisms employ Newtonian physics. This is the belief that you can understand life, biology, the environment, by just looking at the material components, such as Newton suggested the universe was made only out of matter, and that its understanding could be made by just studying matter. Biology is still in a Newtonian world, and perceives the body as a physical entity made out of matter, only influenced by matter. This particular assumption is the one that has caused us to separate mind from body. Body being matter is the subject of science. Mind, an epiphenomenon or consequence of biology, is energy. Since biology is of a Newtonian belief system, it doesn't allow or acknowledge the role of energy to feed back and alter the matter. So, based on that matter-only universe, science has conveniently separated the mind from body and actually devalued the role of mind in our lives. And this is an unfortunate situation, and it is scientifically incorrect, because as an assumption, Newtonian physics really doesn't explain the nature of the universe, because in 1925, we acquired a new physics called quantum physics or quantum mechanics that gives mechanisms that are completely different to understanding the universe and life as those compared to the Newtonian belief. So our perception of a material-only biology and environment is no longer scientifically accurate, and we'll talk about that. Another assumption, which is leading to our demise, is the one that I emphasized in the beginning here, that genes control life. And the relevance about that is the belief that since we are victims of our heredity, that life is out of our control and that all we can do is our best to try to stay alive by adjusting our machinery with drugs and pharmaceutical agents. It turns out that genes do not control life. And when we identify what does, we will be greatly empowered because, as I mentioned, it's our perceptions that control life. And by changing our perceptions, we can get control over our lives. And assumption number three is really a very dangerous assumption. Assumption number three is the suggestion that we arrived at this point in our evolution using the mechanisms of Darwinian theory. This is a theory that most people remember, even if they don't know the science, they're very familiar with the concept of the survival of the fittest in the struggle for existence. It's a belief system that says that evolution is a continuous struggle, a battle, as Tennyson said, red in tooth and claw, suggesting that it's a survival of the fittest competition, that life is competition, the biggest, baddest dog wins. And why this becomes relevant is it turns out that evolution is not based on competition. In fact, evolution, it appears now, is based on a 180-degree opposite consideration. It's based on cooperation. So until we understand that, we keep competing with each other, struggling, and destroying the planet without recognizing that our survival is in the concept of cooperation, and that our continued competition is the death knell of human civilization. So we're going to talk about each one of these three hypotheses one at a time, and then put them together in a conclusion. So we'll start with assumption number one. Biological processes employ Newtonian physics. As I mentioned early on, Newton was the man who created the science in an equation where he put in the data about the planets and was able to predict the movement of the solar system, and then revealed that since you could predict the nature of the solar system, everything in the solar system should be amenable to the same kind of equation, so you could predict the nature of a living organism or predict the nature of a human. And this is where biology comes in and says, okay, according to that conventional understanding of physics, the human body is a physical machine, and that you can understand the nature of this physical machine using three principles associated with Newtonian physics. The three principles are materialism, reductionism, and determinism. Materialism is a simple fact that says all that matters is matter. And basically, the principles of Newtonian physics say you want to understand the universe, just focus on the material things, study them, and then you'll get all the insights you need to know about how life in the universe works. The second principle is called reductionism. And reductionism means this. Okay, some things are very complex structures and some things are simple structures. How can you understand the nature of something that's very complex? And the answer is, according to reductionism, well, take it apart. Study all the pieces. Once you know how all the pieces work, you can reassemble the pieces and then get an understanding about the whole. So taking things apart and looking at them is reductionism. Thirdly, the next understanding is this. If I know how an organism is made, all of its parts and its pieces, then it says, if I know how these parts and pieces interact, if I change any of the parts and pieces, I can control the outcome of what happens to that individual. So basically, the concept of determinism says that you provide me with a patient who's not doing well, I look at their physical biology, identify the part that's not working right, change the parts using drugs conventionally, and as a result, I'll be able to control the outcome and return the individual back to health. So those are the three principal components of a mechanized Newtonian world, which are materialism, reductionism, and determinism. And this whole understanding is really based on the fact that the smallest pieces of the universe are called atoms. That atoms are like little marbles and solid things. And as a result, what you can say is when you take everything apart, you can look at the atoms that they're made out of, and that the character of the atoms will collectively contribute to the character of what the atoms comprise. So that if you want to understand a human by taking it apart, you'll be able to understand the nature of how it works, because we're dealing with parts and pieces that are physical, such as the atoms. And this, as I said, leads us to reductionism. So very simply, the science starts out with gross anatomy. Yeah, just looking at what the body is all about. But reductionism says at some point you need to take it apart to see how it works. So then we take the dissections and we say, okay, these are muscles and these are bones. Yeah, but now how do they work? Well, the next level is take those apart, and that's called microscopic anatomy. So we go from gross anatomy to microscopic anatomy. Now we're looking at the cells and tissues in the microscope. And then when we try to get an understanding of that, we realize, well, they're made out of proteins and sugars and fats. So what are we going to do that? Take it apart again. So now we take cells apart and look at their components, but that's called biochemistry. So each step of the way, we're reducing the structure to look at the parts, to get an understanding of how the parts interact so that we can see how the whole thing works. And this has been very effective and allowed us a lot of great advances in science, but then ran up against the limitation. Because what this really reveals is that we are only trying to study the universe in regard to these physical parts. It was in about 1895 that the first insights started to reveal that maybe the atom isn't the smallest thing. Maybe there are things inside the atom. We started to identify things that we would call the nucleus or the electrons inside an atom. And all of a sudden it says, oh my goodness, that changes physics, because before physics thought that the atoms were the smallest little particles like marbles and ball bearings. But now we're beginning to find, wait, there's more to be found out about the nature of the atom by looking inside of it. At first, all these new parts and pieces started to look like just all little material, mechanical parts of an atom. But then as the research started to get deeper, it started to reveal that, but even these parts and pieces don't have the character of matter. That actually, when you start to look at them, you find out that there are no physical electrons inside of an atom. That was a perception. We believed atoms to be material, so we wanted to look at its parts as material parts. But when physicists started to look at them, they started to find out that electrons were like energy waves, like ripples on a pond, that the nucleus wasn't physical either. Basically, it said this: if I could shrink you down to the size of an atom and give you a camera, and say, fly through an atom and take all the pictures of everything you see. And so you come back from that trip, and I take the film out of the camera and develop it. Here's the big surprise. There is nothing on any of the pictures, because there is nothing physical inside the atom. The atom is filled with vortices of energy, like microscopic tornadoes collectively swirling around each other. And what that really means is there is no structure to an atom. An atom is an energy vortex. And yet, wait a minute, if atoms make molecules, and atoms are made out of energy, what are molecules made out of? Well, they're made out of energy. Yeah, but molecules assemble into cells and cells assemble into people. What are people made out of? At the bottom line, everything in the universe is made out of energy. This is the nature of quantum mechanics. It reveals that underneath that structure of the marbles and ball bearings we call atoms are nothing but energy vortices. And yet you yourself might say, well, wait, this wall is hard. I can't get my hand through the wall. That the physical reality is physical. I can hold it. I can bend it. I can break it. It must be material. And the reality is, it's an illusion of matter. And yet there is something physical to it. So let me give you an analogy. How something that's made out of invisible forces can feel as hard as concrete. And it goes like this. Imagine you're driving down the street and a tornado is moving your way, and this big swirling cloud is coming up the street, and you're driving down the street. If you drove your car at 100 miles an hour straight into that tornado, it would be the same as hitting a stone wall. It would destroy your car. But the question is, but what's in a tornado that's physical? Well, you can see the tornado because of all the dirt and dust that got picked up in the storm, like a dust devil moving across the desert floor. But the reality is this: if you could filter out the dust and dirt, the tornado is still there. So interesting enough, let's say that tornado is coming down the street. It doesn't have any dust and dirt in it. You can't see it. And it's coming right down the street, and you're driving 100 miles an hour, and you hit this invisible tornado, it'd be the same as hitting a stone wall. The point is this: that the forces of the vortices of energy are so resistant that you can't put your hand through that concrete wall. Not because there's actual physical concrete that's made out of particles, but because all the atoms that make them up are miniature tornadoes, which have force fields. So there's a real important understanding that everything in the universe now is understood to be made out of energy. That atoms are made out of energy, and atoms provide for the material universe, but that's all made out of energy. It has a force to it, so that to our perception, it appears physical and solid and concrete-like, and yet the reality is it's only energy. Why is this relevant if we look at matter as energy? And the answer is because energy interacts with other energy, even though they appear to be separate from each other. So, for example, say I take a rock and drop it into a pond. You start to see where the rock hit the water, ripples start radiating away in waves. Now, you might think that's the water moving. But interestingly enough, the ripples are the energy moving through the water, not the water moving itself. And some people say, come on, I can see the ripples moving. And the answer is, look, if you were fishing at that moment and you had a float, a bobber on your line that was in the water, and the ripples started to go by, if the water was moving, the bobber and the float would move along with the ripples and continue farther away. But if you're fishing and you see the ripples come, you'll notice one funny thing. As the ripples hit your bobber will lift up and then drop back down again, but it won't move. And what's the relevance is, the water wasn't moving. It was the energy in the water. The water was giving shape to the energy so you could visualize the flow of energy as waves. So that's what waves look like. If there's no water, there's still waves running through that are energy fields. And so what's relevant about this is that the water wasn't moving. It was the wave. And that's why the power of the wave lifted the bobber up and then dropped the bobber and lifted it up and dropped it each time a peak of the wave passed by. But the water wasn't moving. And that's why the bobber didn't move along with the ripples. So the point is this. Energy looks like the ripples of a pond when a rock gets dropped into the water and you see it. But it's not physical, but they're force. There's a force to them, a force strong enough to cause the bobber to be lifted up and the bobber to be dropped again, so that the energy has a power to it, a force to it. Now, what's interesting about it is this. What if two energy waves hit each other? What would happen then? Well, to demonstrate that, what I would do is hold two rocks up separated from each other. And let's say I took two rocks of exactly the same size and exactly the same mass and dropped them from exactly the same height at exactly the same time. The two rocks would hit the water in unison. As the rocks hit the water, ripples would start emanating from where the rocks hit, and they would start converging on each other. So the ripples from one rock will be moving toward where the ripples from the other rock are converging toward each other. And the question is this, what happens when two energy waves meet? And the answer can be observed by looking at the interface in the water where the two sets of ripples, one from one rock, one from the other rock, converge on each other. And here's what we find out. There's something called interference. The two waves will interfere with each other. And here's what happens. When the two waves interfere, the resulting interference pattern, where the two waves overlap, are the result of adding up the power of the waves. What does it mean by the power of the waves? So let's go back for a second and think about those ripples. There's a high peak and then a low peak, and then a high peak and then a low peak. And the net result about this is that you can measure the height of the wave and give a number to it. So let's say the highest part of the ripple is +1, but then the ripple goes down to a valley before it comes back up. And we'll say the lowest part of the ripple is -1, and about midway between is 0. So I have waves, and I can give value to them by the height. The higher the wave, the more power. And that's easily shown by this. The bigger the rock I drop in the water, the more energy it's going to give to the water. The bigger the rock, the higher the ripples. So the wave outline that you see on the water is actually the equivalent of the wave going through space. The height of the ripples is an equivalent of power. Meaning the more powerful the wave, the higher the ripples. So when two ripples converge, you add up their powers, their heights. So here's the point. If I drop both rocks at exactly the same time and the ripples converge, they're in symmetry. Both ripples are going up at the same time. Both ripples are going down at the same time. So I say, okay, in the region of overlap, what would be the resulting wave shape? And the answer is, well, since they're both in harmony with each other, they're both going up at the same time, they're both going down at the same time, then you just add the heights and the depths together. So two ripples at +1 would give me a ripple at +2. And two ripples at their low point, -1. If two -1s overlap, that would be -2. So here's the result. Two ripples are converging toward each other that are in harmony, meaning that they're both going up and down at exactly the same time. Where the two ripples converge, you're going to find that the height of the ripples in that converging area are going to be twice as high as they are on either side where the ripples were coming toward the center. So what this says is that waves can interfere with each other, and when they do, the power is greater as amplified by the height of the waves. There's another kind of interference that's completely the opposite. And how this happens is, I drop the two rocks, same size, same mass, same height, but I drop one rock ahead of the other rock. And so when one rock hits the water, the ripple is on its way up. But while that ripple's on its way up, the other rock hits the water and the ripple's on the way down. So now I have two ripples coming toward each other, but there's what we say out of phase. The one ripple from one rock, as it's going up, the ripple derived from the other rock is on its way down. So, and they're overlap. One rock, the ripple part is up, and the overlap of the other one, the ripple part is down. So let's say the ripple part of the one going up is plus one, and the ripple going down is minus one. So I add the two together. From one rock, the one was going up. The other rock, the ripple was going down. I add them together. Plus one, minus one, zero. And what this is when these two wave patterns interfere with each other, they actually go to zero and flatten the wave. There's no wave at all. The two waves cancel each other out. So I can talk about two extremes of energy interference. One of them, the ripples are in harmony with each other. When they come together, you amplify the waves, so there's more power when two energies come together. That's called interference, but it's called constructive interference. The other part is when the two ripples come together, they cancel each other out. That's called destructive interference because you lost the power. So one, they enhance each other, and the other, they cancel each other. And all interactions are between those two, between energies that interact as waves. They're either the full range is complete constructive interference or complete destructive interference or something in the middle between the two. But basically, it says this, energies interact. And this becomes personally relevant to us for this following reason. I go back to the story of atoms. And I said that atoms are not physical things. Atoms are energies that are spinning in vortices. And the significance is that every atom radiates energy. Every atom is the equivalent of a generator because it's spinning like that tornado vortex, and it's spinning with charge on it. Then radiating away from every atom is a set of waves like ripples that are derived from that atom. In fact, a scientific fact, every atom and molecule gives off light and absorbs light, meaning that the vibration of every atom, the waves are in, many of them, in the range of light, so that atoms are giving off light as they're spinning. But because waves can interfere with each other, then not only do they give off light, they can absorb light, so two waves can interact with each other. So now I stop for a second and say, every atom in your body is generating waves right now. All the atoms form molecules, but the complexity of the waves are dependent on the subunits that are collectively together. So when I put a whole bunch of atoms together and make a molecule, the character of the molecule is the interference pattern of the atoms that make up that molecule. But the molecules come together and make cells. And so that the nature of the cells is that they have energy that is the collective nature of their components. And the cells make people. And that means a truth in biology and physics is you are giving off energy right now. Your waves are characteristic of the atoms and molecules that are making up your biology. You are a generator of waves, but you also, because waves interact with waves, you are a recipient of waves as well. And as a result, when you interact in your environment, you're not just generating waves, you're receiving waves, and the result is then there's interference, so you are both absorbing and sending energy at the same time, and that your energy is your power, and so that how much energy you have is the height of your wave. And so why is this relevant? Now think about it this way. I said that energies can be constructive interference when they come together or destructive interference. You are made out of energy, so what this automatically says, that you've already experienced with your interaction with waves in the field. You've experienced personally what is called constructive interference and destructive interference, but probably not in those terms. You're probably more familiar with the terms such as good vibes and bad vibes. Vibes. We talk about the vibes. Those are the waves that we're all vibrating. We're all energy. And the interesting thing about it is this. When you're out in the world and there's somebody or something else that's giving off energy, and both of your waves are harmonic, meaning they're both the same kind of waves, when they come together, they can interact with each other and result in a constructive interference. So, give you an example. It's Friday night, you've had a rough week, you're really tired, but you say, oh, I got to go to this party, I promised these people I'd go to this party, and reluctantly you get yourself dressed, you drag yourself to this party, and you're really tired after this whole week. But at this party, you start to meet other people, people you hadn't met before, and all of a sudden you start to realize at some point, you are now have a lot of energy. In fact, you have so much energy, you actually might even be on your toes. And these are good vibes. You're getting good vibes from what's going on. And all of a sudden you realize you've just been energized. Well, that's a constructive interference because you're starting to pick up energy from things around you that have a similar kind of energy, a harmonic energy that has the same waves as you. So when the two waves come together, remember the peak of the ripples gets higher. That is a reflection of more power. And that's when all of a sudden you feel good vibes and you feel stronger and more alive. You've also felt bad vibes. And bad vibes are when two energies come together and cancel each other out. And where have you felt bad vibes? Well, consider this. Maybe you were lost and you don't know where you are and you're in a dark city street or something and you're in a neighborhood that all of a sudden you feel like, uh-oh, I'm out of place right here. And all of a sudden you start to feel that your energy dissipates and all of a sudden you feel very flat. You feel very vulnerable at this moment. Your energy is bottoming out. It's a low ebb. What you're doing is that your energy is mixing with the energy of the environment. But the environment energy is not harmonic with you. In fact, it's out of resonance with you. And so when the energy of the environment and your energy come together, there's an interference pattern. But rather than constructive, it's destructive interference. So the relevance about that is that your energy and your body is reflecting the energy around you as well, because the atoms in your body are not only giving off energy, they're absorbing energy. Interesting point. Humans are the only organisms that really use language to describe who and what and where we are in our planetary situation. All other organisms depend on just reading the vibration. We're capable of reading the vibration, and that's what we feel in good vibes and bad vibes, but we've also been programmed, most of us, to not pay attention to our feelings and to actually listen to people. And so it's very interesting because what we actually have done by denying our feelings and denying that sensitivity have actually lost one of the most important communication mechanisms that biology offers. Every living organism communicates with these vibrations. Animals communicate with plants. They communicate with other animals. Shamans talk to plants. They don't have a dialogue with human words. They have a dialogue with vibrations. And the relevance, even we have this ability, but if we don't exercise it, we miss it. And why is this a problem? Because the feeling of vibes is letting you know whether you are in a place in your world that is harmonious and supporting you, or if you're feeling a cancellation of your energy, you know, again, bad vibes or destructive interference, it suggests that whatever you're being involved with is out of harmony with you. And so therefore, if you were actually sensitive to these vibrations, you would always be leading yourself to places that would encourage your survival, your growth, your love, etc., and keep you away from places that would take advantage of you and cancel who you are. Just a simple understanding. A mugger doesn't just pick anybody who's walking down the street. The mugger, like any predator, if it's a lion chasing a gazelle or the mugger looking for a fast buck, is looking at the prey and reading the prey. Well, what is the mugger reading? He's reading the energy that comes off. If a person is afraid, then as a result of that fear, they're in a state of destructive interference. And as a result of that, they're easily taken by the mugger. If a person is strong and not buying into that vibration, the mugger's not going to pick on that individual because the mugger doesn't want a hassle. He wants somebody who's going to turn it over easily. So what is the mugger doing? Reading his prey as much as the lion is reading his prey. The lion is going to chase the animal that is going to be the least resistant. The lion is hungry. It's not looking for antlers to put on its fireplace mantle. It's looking for food, so it's going to chase the weakest one, and nature has always done that, eliminated the weakest one. When we are not paying attention to our vibrational energies, then we are missing the most important readouts from our environment. And as we start to become aware of that, we start to realize that everything that's made out of atoms and molecules give off energy, that everything in our world is involved with energy, and that, in fact, we are so intimately connected with this energy that when you think about it, for example, if you're wearing a blouse or a shirt, for let's use that as an example, you went to the store and let's say there were a dozen different versions of that blouse or shirt. Why did you pick the one that you picked? Stop for a second and think about it. Basically, you picked it because it felt good. It felt better than the other ones. Aha! Now you're touching the vibration. The vibration is the sensation of feeling. Everything gives off energy. The pictures in your house that you hang up on your wall are harmonic with you and make you feel good. You can walk into somebody else's house and they have artwork in there that can make you feel very edgy because the vibration from that artwork doesn't agree with you. What's the point? Well, the concept of feng shui, for example, that energies in the field becomes very important because you are interacting not just with other beings that have energy, but everything physical in the planet as well. So this understanding of the new physics says everything has energy and all energies are entangled and interact with each other. And therefore, you must pay attention to these invisible forces that are involved with what's going on in your life. And it's really fun for me as a biologist to realize that physicists have advanced this knowledge of vibration and frequency and have offered the medical profession great new technology, scanning systems, CAT scans, MRI, sonograms, PET scans, all these new technologies. These are technologies, for example, if you take a mammogram and a woman is looking at her, and the doctor, of course, looking at this mammogram of her breast. Now, what is a mammogram? It's not a photograph of the breast. It's an energy profile. Well, the physicists know that all molecules and cells made out of molecules give off energy, that the character of the energy that you're reading is a character of the material that you're studying. So when you look at a CAT scan, or let's say a mammogram, and you see this area where there's different frequencies as manifest by different colors in the scan, you can say, oh my goodness, there's a cancer. Now, are you physically seeing the cancer? And the answer is no. You're reading the vibrational energy of a cancer. And what's interesting about it is, well, medicine itself doesn't train its doctors to recognize that the energy is part of the system. They very easily adopted to using these scan systems as roadmaps to determine what they're going to do in the body, what's going on inside the body. And it's always a humorous thing to me that they read this map and basically don't have the fundamental understanding that the map is not just a map, it's a direct readout of the energy that's present in the system. Relevance about that is in our conventional understanding of medicine. If you see this area in a mammogram that looks cancerous, the physician uses that as a map marker and says, now I'm going to get my scalpel and go to that exact spot and cut out that cancer. But it's interesting because if you understand the nature of the physics, you're studying the emitting of energy from a cancer. But then you go back to the fundamental law of physics. It says, all atoms and molecules don't just give off energy, they absorb energy. And through the concept of constructive and destructive interference, it would reveal that rather than cutting out the cancer, what if you applied an energy that through interference patterns would change the energy of that cancer cell and bring it back to a normal energy? Presumably then, that's when you would get a healing effect. And essentially, this would make sense out of thousands of years of history of what are called hands-on healing. When people put their hands on people and energize people, they're actually putting energy in. So the healer is emitting an energy. The recipient is getting an energy. It's interacting with their body through interference, and through that interference, changing the character of the energy, which is reflected in the character of the physical matter, because the matter is the energy. So why this becomes really exciting is that the new biologies are beginning to reveal the scan systems, so we're reading the energy being emitted. All we have to do is add the next part back in and say, rather than physically manipulating a tissue, what if we redirect energy of appropriate frequencies back into the system to change the atoms and molecules through interference patterns. This is not a new idea. In fact, in the 20s and 30s, there were many people around, one of them Royal Rife, who developed a system of identifying the vibrational frequencies of certain viruses and pathogens, and found that by putting in energy into a system, for example, using destructive interference, adjusted to the energy pattern of a virus or a bacterium, let's say, by putting in a frequency that was completely out of harmony with that, but balance it, you could actually kill selectively bacteria and viruses by focusing these different frequencies on it, so that you could heal by adjusting the energies to make, you know, perfect interactions or interference patterns with the target tissue. Medicine, to some degree, uses a little piece of that today, but only in a very small, little narrow realm of expertise, and that is in people that have kidney stones. Of course, the old way of passing a kidney stone is to go through all the struggle of moving the stone down through the ureter and then through the urethra, which is obviously a very harmful and painful process. They recognize this. Kidney stones have crystals with frequencies in them, and that by getting a frequency generator, then they could actually cause, through a process called constructive interference, send a frequency in that matches the frequency of the kidney stone, causing the amplitude of the waves, those ripples we're talking about, increasing the height of the ripples, which increases the power of the atoms. And as a result of that, the atoms, when empowered with this broadcast energy, actually start to spin faster and causes the kidney stone to explode. Maybe you've seen something like this with some vocalists like Ella Fitzgerald that can reach a particular frequency with her vocal rendition and actually cause a crystal goblet to explode. It's the same story. It's like her voice is harmonically resonant with the vibration of the atoms in the crystal. When she broadcasts her voice, the vibrational frequency of her voice is like waves coming toward the atoms, which have waves. And because she's harmonically right on, then when the two waves come together, it increases the amplitude, which in the case of the atom receiving those waves, the increase in amplitude causes the atom to spin faster. And as a result, the goblet doesn't break. If you actually see a video of it, the goblet explodes because the atoms are now spinning with such extra power they can't hold on to each other, and this goblet explodes. Physicians are using that same concept and destroying kidney stones, which have certain frequencies. But the reality was, about 80 or so years ago, people like Royal Rife and others were identifying that you could also focus other things such as viruses and bacteria using the same physical process, cause them to explode or destroy these organisms with very high specificity because the frequencies only complement structures with harmonic frequencies, so that there was a beautiful precision in this kind of energy healing. And this is really the future of medicine, although we're not there with it right now.